You've just tuned into Beyond Your Past, part of the Mental Health News Radio Network. Welcome back to Beyond Your Past. I'm your host, Matt Pappas, certified life coach specializing in overcoming anxiety and trauma recovery. And this podcast is all about helping you move forward from what holds you back. Each week, you'll hear from coaches, clinicians, and advocates who've overcome tremendous odds and are now using their journey to inspire you throughout yours. This is your place to feel validated and encouraged as you take your life back and live free from your past. Are you ready? Let's do this. Today, I'm joined by Alan Eisenberg, certified life coach and friend, and the founder of bullyingrecovery.org, whose mission is to help those who suffer from complex post-traumatic stress disorder as a result of bullying so they can receive the help that they need to recover. As part of his mission, Alan shares his story by speaking to all age groups about issues of bullying, the damage that bullying does, and the story of his recovery from CPTSD. Alan has spoken to thousands of people about these issues, and his organization helps to continue to spread this message. So, Alan, welcome to the show, man. Thanks for joining me, bro. How are you?
Hey, great, Matt. It's great to talk to you again, and I'm so happy to be on your show.
Absolutely, man. The pleasure is all mine. And for those who may remember and those who are regular listeners to the podcast, I was on Alan's podcast earlier in 2017, and I'll put the links to that in the show notes and in the blog post. And of course, I will definitely tweet that out again. You can find all the information for that, of course, over on his website, bullyingrecovery.org. And we're going to talk about that here today. So why don't we start out, man? Let's kind of jump right into it. And so you started this website. So why don't you give us a little bit of background on what it's about and why you started bullyingrecovery.org?
Yeah, well, it's a little like you as you've transitioned beyond your past, right? You were surviving your past before. It was really as I was hearing you, that you did that, I thought, well, I did the exact same thing. So I was bullied really, really bad, at least, you know, for me, from when I was age 6 to 13 when I was living up in Massachusetts. And then I don't want to say what would have happened had we not moved, but it was getting to the point where, you know, I was hitting those teenage years and I was really struggling. And I'm what's known as a HSP or a highly sensitive person. And I didn't discover this for many, many years afterward. But yeah, when I was young, it was like kids are kids, get over it. Well, I couldn't get over it. And I didn't know why. And all I did was develop anger, low self-esteem, disbelief in myself, fear of others, all of these things. And I would constantly tell my parents during my teenage years that it was due to the bullying. And they of course didn't believe me. They're like, come on, that's over. You've moved. It's done. And as I got older, you know, life wasn't terrible. I went to college. I got married. I had two wonderful boys. And still something was bothering me and something was buried in me. And I really didn't know what it was. But I knew that bullying was somehow part of this formation of who I was feeling to be. And I did have points that of stress really affecting me, anxiety. And finally, depression set in at some point, at a very critical point. And it was actually after I started my first site, which was called Bullying Stories. So I thought cathartically, I'm going to write down all my stories on the web, and I'm going to let people know that adults still feel bad, you know, feel these feelings that I have, and that's going to make me feel better. So that was my philosophical. And what happened was always a surprise, I think, for those of us that have been doing something that they have passion about and that they care about. They don't realize that there's a whole bunch of other people that I'm sure you know through all the work you do that are having the same exact problem, but not speaking about it. And so all of a sudden I opened this sort of portal to other people being able to put their stories in, to a discovery of a whole level of research that started happening. And then in 2010, if you remember, sort of the media picked up on it. There was bullying stories every day. And it was realized sort of suicides were happening on YouTube, you know, by kids who are saying it's because I was bullied. And finally, the study got to the point where they did a study and said, yes, people are suffering with complex post-traumatic stress disorder. And that's what people who were bullied in their youth and are sensitive, typically, are dealing with, which is exactly, I sat there and it was like textbook. I'm like, that's me. And so, you know, what I realized is even all the work I had done, I still ended up in a depression. I still ended up in anxiety. And I didn't do what I call my third act, which was recovery. So my first act was being bullied. My second act was all my anger and depression and everything. And then I really had to learn how to recover. And luckily, one, I'm a motivated self-learner. I didn't want to be this way. Two, I seeked the professional help that those people are qualified to do. And luckily, I found people who knew that what I was saying for years was true. And I did get through it. And I'm 20 times better today than I was in any other time in my life since I was 6 years old. And I'm 49, almost 50. So in 2015, I decided I'd do two things. I would start a company called Bullying Recovery, because it's no longer bullying stories. I want to talk about helping people recover from the damage it does. And then I also wrote my memoir, A Ladder in the Dark, which chronicled the three acts that I needed. I always knew I wanted to write a book. Well, actually, I can't say that. I didn't have a lot of belief that I was going to write. But once I did a lot of writing, once I learned that writing was a cathartic method of healing for me, I wrote my book after being luckily published in other sources. And it was very well accepted. I won't say it's so highly read. I'm Stephen King, but you know, it got 42 reviews on Amazon, not too bad, mostly fives. And I said, you know, my voice is something I need to be doing something more with. So Bullying Recovery is really there to continue talking about and helping people understand that it is real damage, that these things have happened and the studies are now done and we know this, and how to seek recovery, which is different really for everybody. So I don't want to say my recovery and reading my book is going to help you learn to recover. It's going to help you learn that you can recover. And I hope to be that inspiration through the work I do and why I became a coach, which so I could help people.
This topic is so important. As a survivor of bullying myself, you know, when you and I first connected, our stories have taken a lot of very similar paths. You know, as you mentioned, you had bullying stories. I have surviving my past. You're now into bullying recovery. I have beyond your past. You know, we're both coaches. We've both gone through so much healing and working with professionals, and we're helping others. And, you know, we've both written books. I mean, the similarities, you know, not even to mention that, like, I think somebody said that our pictures even look similar. So I'm not sure if we're like long lost brothers or what, dude, but.
Well, I say I've met more brothers from another mother or sisters from another mother doing this. It's like, well, your story is my story. And this woman who's well known in my industry, Ellen DeLora, who wrote sort of the ultimate book about bullying scars. It's called Bullying Scars. She talked to 850 adults who were still suffering. And I met her after she wrote it, and I sent her my book, and she's like, oh my gosh, you know. You just wrote what you wrote a book about what I said, what I found out. And it's so cool. You know, it's like we're, you know, damage is damage. And that's what I tell people, you know, abuse is abuse. War causes damage to people who are sensitive. And this is the result. You know, the result is this. And so we're brothers from another mother. You know, it's our similarities are much greater than our differences.
Every time I talk to somebody through a podcast, or I meet them, you know, as a guest blogger or, you know, a fellow coach or whatever, and you hear people's stories, you know, whether they are survivors of some type of trauma or their paths have led them to a similar point to where ours are, it's just incredible to see so many people who are understanding what something like bullying does to you. You know, it's not just the physical wounds that can heal, you know, over time. I mean, this is trauma that affects your brain on a very deep level. It damages your brain. And, you know, as you and I know, it's something that takes an incredible amount of work to work through, to recover from, to be able to really understand exactly what's going on when bullying happens. So one of the other questions I have for you is, you know, your bullying happened to you during your youth. Mine happened to me from late elementary school all the way through the end of middle school, really into my freshman year. So quite a while. All kinds of typical things that happened to kids in school happened to me. It probably happened to you as well. Mm-hmm. But why do you think that the events that happened, whatever they were, stay with us for so long?
Yeah, that's what I've spent, like, once I got better, I've spent more time on that and trying to really understand and learn more. And what's really nice is that today we talk about things that the internet has opened up this world of being able to express things that were being hidden for so long. You know, for example, I'm not a guy's guy. I never have been. I'm sensitive, and I'm highly sensitive. And these are real things. Elaine Aaron has written two books about highly sensitive people that I knew nothing about until I needed to find them. But I had all these things occur in my life. There was a recent story published about if you get goosebumps at a concert or listening to music, what it means. And of course, it means you're highly sensitive. And I'm like, I go to concerts and the band comes out that I want to see, and the audience emotion high and the band emotion high gets me so bad, I'm crying and shaking. And I'm like, what's going on? I'm at a concert. And sometimes a song will come on the radio and I hadn't heard it in a long time, and I'll have an emotional reaction to it of some sort. You know, these are the things that I deal with. And the discovery that I'm a highly sensitive person and that 20% of us are was such an eye-opening experience, because everything, like everything in life, it's yin and yang. It's good and bad. And it's learning to control what that means. So instead of taking everything personally or absorbing other people's emotions, I learned to deal with it. I learned to have outlets. And I think when you're young, you don't understand these things. You're in a developmental phase. And that's the really bad thing when you talk about when it happened to you is when it happened to me, of course. And that's when it happens. You know, by sort of high school, the bullying turns into more ignoring than anything. I don't think as we get older, it kind of becomes more not communicating or not wanting to be around you versus fighting or some of these other really nasty things that happen. And then, of course, there's bullying all the way through adult years. And I've found many people who are bullied by their family, siblings. It's much bigger than, you know, the little world of youth bullying that I started in. And so I think that there's been studies that show there are kids who are natural negotiators. There are kids who just don't have an emotional connection. And then there's kids like me who are, interestingly enough, other discoveries, I'm an extroverted introvert. So we throw these labels on ourselves, right? Like, well, I'm very extroverted and I'm doing all this public stuff. But after we do this podcast, I'm going to be so exhausted that my wife's going to come home and I'm just going to totally ignore her because I just need me. And that's the way my life works. So I've gotten to know me and I've gotten to fall in love with who I am and appreciate the good and bad that comes with who I am. But I think that discovery is very hard to come by, particularly in those early years when you're forming sort of who you're going to be, and then it gets damaged. And that's what I'm really, really focused on, is educating the people who help youth. Because those are the ones, it's an individual thing. We need to help individuals. And I'm not just talking about bullying victims. The bullies have things going on in their lives too. It's usually at home. They have low self-esteem. I mean, they're 60% more likely to get a felony conviction, 40% more likely to have two. Their lives get ruined as well. So everything, there's pluses and minuses. And then, you know, my anger, the anger I started to develop because of bullying, made me a little bit of a bully to my family because I needed an outlet. So that's the reality.
There's so many things that are flying through my mind right now as you're talking, and everything is so spot on. One of the things you mentioned, highly sensitive person, you know, that's me, like to a T. You know, you mentioned going to a concert or hearing something on the radio, a song or whatever. And, you know, as you and I were talking before we started recording, and, you know, as some who follow me on social media stuff know, my daughter just got married this past weekend as of the time that where we are recording this here in December 2017. And, you know, we did the father-daughter dance, and we danced to Butterfly Kisses. And I lost it up there when we were dancing. Thank goodness she kept me smiling. We were talking and I got through it. But things like that, hearing a song, and even afterwards, you know, now that the ceremony's over and they're on their honeymoon right now and starting their life, I sat here over the last couple of days since the wedding was done, and I played that song over and over. And it brings up so many emotions. And, you know, it's not just that song. It happens a lot. As you mentioned, when you go to a concert, you hear music, you see something, you read something, you just get this influx of emotions. And when you're a child and you are starting, you know, as your brain develops and you know, you have no idea that you're a highly emotional person or, you know, a highly sensitive person, and you don't know what's going on. You're trying to figure yourself out. You don't know why you're taking everything so personally. And then that just fuels the fire of, you know, of everybody who are the abusers, those who are doing the bullying, and you don't know what's going on. And then as you mentioned, the more you study it, learn about it, and you realize, you know, how being a highly sensitive person can play into really taking the brunt of being bullied and how that damage occurs. And, you know, I love the work that you're doing, you know, working with those who are working with youth. Your story and your book and the resources, it's so incredibly needed. Two of my kids had some experience to being bullied. And so I knew what they were, you know, coming from. I could see the signs, and I'm sure, you know, you've seen it a million times in your work with people. And it's incredibly disheartening to see it, that in this day and age it's still going on, but unfortunately it's not really a surprise either.
Yeah. One of the stories I tell is, really, really, it's my most disturbing story. And I think one of the low points when I was in a low place, the movie Bully came out, which was made by Lee Hirsch, which was a straight up documentary, no dialogue, just filming these incidences. And one of the key incidences was a playback of something that happened to me in 1979 that I wrote about in 2007 that I was watching on the screen in 2013. And what made me sit in a theater and literally cry my eyes out was, it was a school administrator, and there's the victim is being punched by the bully as they enter the vestibule, the opening, and she's standing there, and she pulls the two aside, and then there's a bystander, and he comes over and he goes, I saw everything that happened, and she says, no, you go away. And then she says, you know, you two shake hands. And the bully, of course, puts out his hand real dramatically, and the bully victim won't take his hand. And she starts admonishing the victim. She starts victimizing the victim and telling him she expected more and better from him, and all of these things. And I'm like, this happened exactly to me by a counselor who thought, bringing the kid in, I said, I don't want you to tell him that about this bullying, you know, he begged me to name him, and I didn't want to do it, and I did it, and then he's in the room, and then shake hands, oh, it was a misunderstanding, blah, 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 lets us leave together, even worse, and of course, we round the corner, and he punches me in the gut, and I'm on the ground, and he's like, if you ever tell anyone again that I bully you, I'll kill you, and at that moment, I believed it, and I saw this play out with the victimizing of the victim. And then you start thinking about what we're seeing today. You know, women who get raped on college campuses rarely tell the campus about it because they're going to be re-victimized. What were you wearing? Were you drinking? Did you flirt with him? You know, did you go home with him? What does any of that matter if they were raped? They still didn't deserve to be raped. Just because I'm sensitive doesn't mean I deserve to be bullied. And so what happens is, well, you know, what I was crying about is I almost expected to see that the young man who was named Cole, the victim, would go home and kill himself that day, you know, out of the realization that there was no adults that would ever help him, which was the same thing I felt, you know, which is what I think is when you hear about all these young children, children as young as 8, as young as 6, have killed themselves saying it was about bullying. And it's when you lose that belief that there are adults who care and have empathy and understanding and will do something about it. When you give up the fact that you cannot be protected, that's it. Something's going to happen. And we see it every day now. We read about it almost every day. 4,400 youth kill themselves a year. And now we know a lot of it is around low self-esteem and these effects. I'm not saying anybody can say it's bullying unless the youth says it, but now they are saying it through YouTube and social media channels, and we know it's a big percentage.
It absolutely is a huge percentage. And of course, you know, not only do you have the physical and the emotional bullying that happens in school or, you know, at home at the hands of parents or, you know, siblings or something, but you also have cyberbullying now with it happens online and people just getting, I mean, just raked over the coals constantly by people. And it's a horrific thing that one of my sons went through for a while. And, you know, as you mentioned, the long-term effects of bullying are CPTSD, and you've got other things like depression, and then you've got things like eating disorders, and you've got people who are attempting to take their life. And it's incredibly disheartening to see in this day and age that it's still happening. But of course, as you and I both know, it's unfortunately alive and well. I'm thankful for people like you who are stepping up to not only share your story, because as we both know, when you share your story, it's an incredible validation for anyone who's been through anything even close to what you have and any kind of similar story. And, you know, I know that you've helped so many people. I'm a big fan of your work. And I just want to kind of reiterate here, the long-term effects of this are evident. You know, I'm a survivor of childhood trauma, not only of the bullying, but of narcissistic abuse and childhood sexual abuse. And we know that CPTSD plays into that. And so it's just when you start to do the research, as you've done, as I've done, and, you know, the clients we work with, and you just see the same story just being replayed over and over and over again, and you see yourself in that story, it kind of blows my mind in a way, just to really understand that this stuff that happened to me when I was in high school, and I'm now 46, has been happening way before my time. It's been happening, you know, during your time, and now it's happening in the, you know, now. And I'm grateful for what you're doing to really kind of just educate people as much as possible and give them hope and understanding that, you know, there is that while this is a traumatic experience and it is trauma, that there is hope and healing. And you are a prime example of that, man.
Yeah. Thank you. And yeah, it's really one of those things that you have to consciously be understanding of, particularly for men. I mean, I do think we're very similar, and we talk about this brotherhood. And I think it's because there aren't a lot of men who are willing to stand up and say, I need help, because that's a weakness. And men are taught not to do that. And that's why in the Army, there's such a problem with suicide and drinking and drug use after war and PTSD and all these things. I've actually been honored to be able to help in that way through work I do otherwise. And it is, it's no different. You know, it's when this idea that all men are, should be tough and we should be able to take it. And I just went to a retreat this weekend. So I discovered yoga and peaceful mindfulness and things I needed, you know, especially as an HSP. And so my yoga teacher and I have become really good friends because she's got her own story. I mean, you know, it's amazing. As I like to say, everybody has a story. I wrote a book, but anyone could write a book. Everybody's got a story to tell. And particularly people who are in mindfulness activities, they're there for a reason. So I went on a retreat, and it was me and another guy and 32 women. And I'm looking around, and I'm like, you know what? Men just should be here, and they're not. But I'm here because I'm not afraid to be emotionally vulnerable. And I made that conscious decision some years ago because I couldn't bottle it in. I couldn't do that. And I call that wearing masks. And that's what a lot of us do is, you know, we think, okay, the way we're going to get over this is to pretend like it doesn't affect us, which puts on a mask. And we'll wear lots of masks in different situations. I mean, we all wear masks. When we go to work, we don't act like, most of us don't act like we do when we're home. Because we know there's a certain etiquette to, you know, work, and you don't talk to people a certain way or act a certain way. So we do that. But I think for those of us that are in these situations of damage, we start wearing a lot of masks and we start trying to people please, which is really a bad thing. Because when you're doing what your mind is telling you, this isn't you, yet you keep doing it. It really starts. That's when the damage really starts to, because you start internalizing all this really negative things and you start doing things that you regret, and that you start self-blaming. So ultimately the bully that was in the past is gone and you're now your own bully. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man, I absolutely 100% know exactly what you mean. And I'm sure many of the people who are listeners now who can relate to this, who have either been bullied or are perhaps a parent or a sibling or a friend of somebody who has been through bullying, absolutely understands that. We're talking to Alan Eisenberg, certified life coach, founder of bullyingrecovery.org. And, you know, we discussed, you know, some of the effects of bullying and how it sticks with you and some of the long-term damage. Let's kind of transition now a little bit into what types of strategies and methods have you used, and what seems to have worked best for you in your experience and in your experience in working with others in terms of working through the recovery of being a survivor of bullying?
It's a great question and it's an important one. And again, my recovery, I always caveat, is my recovery, and everybody sort of finds the things, if they search, that work for them best. And I certainly believe in my top three. And when I coach, for anybody, I don't care what they're going through, my top three are necessities. And those top three are pretty much frequently said to anybody. Well, first of all, when you're at the height of a serious mental crisis, and it might be mental illness, it might be a crisis, there are professionals out there. You know, there are reasons why psychiatrists exist. There are reasons why psychologists exist, therapists, and us coaches, which are also now being accepted in the mental health world. Because most of the time, one, we believe in what it does to coach or mentor or have psychiatry or psychology. And two, as I learned real quickly, a psychiatrist will see a psychiatrist, a psychologist usually sees a psychologist, and a coach usually has another coach mentor, right? You know, that's the way we do things. But for me, that top three that I had to do was get sleep. So the first crisis that usually happens is rumination. We ruminate, we are disappointed in ourselves, and then our minds get locked into a rumination. And it's a natural thing that happens, unfortunately, when you start to really respond to the damage and start to absorb it. So sleep. I'm not going to tell you you have to take a pill to sleep. I'm not going to tell you, you know, there's all sorts of techniques. Some do meditation, some do a pill, some do anything, but solid 7-8 hours of sleep. You know, when I wasn't getting that, when I was in the height of my crisis, it was about 2 hours of sleep a night. And then I sat and just stared at walls, and I couldn't concentrate on anything during the day. And that's everybody. I think everybody, sleep is the first thing affected because our minds are not resting, they're ruminating. So I say, figure that out first, because without that, you can't do the next things I say. And the next two are pretty straightforward too. Exercise. We know this. We know that exercise releases endorphins. There are healthy things you put to your brain. Yes, you may decide that you need medical support from a professional psychiatrist, but I tell people honestly, you know, the pill is only going to help you stop sort of that rumination game or that low game that you're playing so that you can get better. But then you have to put the work in. And that work, to me, has exercise with it. And exercise can mean a lot of things. It doesn't have to mean you go to the gym and you do vigorous workouts. Releasing endorphins to the brain and letting your body feel better through exercise can be as simple as taking a good walk every day in nature. And I'll tell you, it's getting cold here. It's December, as you said, and that's almost the best time. I took a hike this weekend for 7 miles, and the air felt better in my lungs than it does in the summer. And you don't realize it. You forget how cooped up you end up staying when you have anxiety or depression. It locks you in the house, and that's the worst place you can be. You know, and I love my gym because they have a great sign walking in that I would have never noticed had I not gone through things myself. And it just says, know that getting here was half the battle. And even today, when I walk in there sometimes, I'm like, I needed to see that. Because I was sitting on the couch, I was watching something, I was doing nothing, maybe messing around on the computer, and I'm like, I need to go do my exercise for me. So you have to sell it to yourself sometimes. Like, I might not feel like it right now, but I need it. And so you go. And then the third, which is sometimes very hard for people, is nutrition. We as a country probably eat the worst food of any country. I mean, we just have made some terrible decisions on messing with food properties in order to mass create breads and other items, chips and corn is, you know, used so much. And, you know, I was brought up snacking. Everybody's brought up snacking. And there's nothing good. You know, what are you eating? What are you putting in your body? Because there's the same thing. Your gut holds these other chemicals that go to your brain. And so what you put in yourself actually does have a full effect on so the serotonin, things like that, that you need. So when you're putting fast food in your body every day because you don't have time, or you're not spending the 10 minutes to make yourself a healthy lunch every day, you're starting to fall apart. So those are my top three. And then the other one I really needed for myself, and I tell people it all the time, stop watching the news. I wanted to be in broadcast media and news media. So I say this with full sincerity, don't watch the news, because the news is a 24-hour cycle that they no longer, they'll put anything out there, and most of it is negative, and maybe they'll hit one good story. And I'm not saying don't pay attention to news. It's on the internet and you can choose what you want to read, but you don't need to read about a child being killed in Minnesota if you're living in Virginia like me. When I was a kid, we read about our little community, and then there was international news or national news by Walter Cronkite. And when Walter Cronkite shed a tear when John F. Kennedy was killed, he was almost fired, because you're not supposed to have that going on. And now what you see is opinionated, and you know, they'll show something immediately without verifying its worth. Or for me, what it was 9/11. I watched those towers come down probably 50 to 100 times. And if you don't think that's going to affect you, it does. Yeah, so I just say, read your news, pick your news, keep up with what you want to keep up with. And maybe as you start to read an article, if it heads down a way and you're like, I don't like this, stop. You know, we should all be educated. We should all keep up with it. But you don't have to hear about all the negativity. You don't have to hear about every fire in every house or every murder that's taking place. Because most murders, 90% of them, are due to relationship. You know, there's really not that many serial killers out there, or people that just kill people for no reason. Most of it is, and this comes from my criminology days, is people who know people. So, you know, it creates paranoia. That's what I think.
You know, man, I have one last question for you, but before I get to it, I just want to back up.
the three things you mentioned, get sleep, exercise, and eat right. And like I was saying them in my head as you were going through, because I really try to practice those as well. And I can tell you, man, like, especially now as I'm getting older, these three things, getting enough sleep, exercise, and eating right, really all play off of each other. I mean, they do. Mm-hmm. I know when I was a kid, you know, teenager in my 20s, I could get like 3 hours of sleep and get up and work like a 12, 16 hour day and not even think twice about it. Now, if I don't get a minimum of 6, and really I should be getting 7. So I try to usually shoot for 7, but if I don't get at least 6, I'm just a disaster. Like especially in the mornings, I can't get going, and then my day's thrown off. And, you know, so you're right. Getting enough sleep helps your body relax, helps your body shut down and recoup. It gives your brain a chance to rest because, as you mentioned, you know, oftentimes, so often as survivors, we are ruminating about anything and everything. So our mind never shuts off. And then with the exercise, just getting outside and breathing in fresh air and listening to the birds and looking at the trees. And, you know, if you're somewhere where the leaves change, you know, where you and I are in the fall, it's an incredible thing. And, you know, the eating rate. You're right. Like packing yourself a lunch for work instead of getting something out of the machine, you know, or going to the cafeteria or whatever. I find myself sometimes falling into the trap of, you know, I'm on the go, I'm doing things, and I stop and I get fast food. And I'm telling you, ma'am, I feel like hell afterwards. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really, and I mean, like, it's no joke. If I get myself some kind of like cheeseburger value meal or something, like I eat it, and within 10, 15 minutes of eating it, I feel like just completely drained, and I feel exhausted even more because there's nothing healthy about it. Obviously, we all know that, but we still do it because it's convenient. And as you said, we are a nation that makes some of the worst eating habits and decisions ever made on the planet, I'm sure. So, but you know, I just want to drive those points home.
Yeah. And it's really simple. Like, you know, the eating right thing is very simple. Any and all diets and any and all, you know, I took a nutrition class in college, and I believe 100% in this saying, the only diet you can be on is a diet for life. So you got to figure out how to do it for your rest of your life, not go on this fad, lose 40 pounds and then come off it. It's just never, we know it doesn't work. We see it all the time, but that idea of what you're putting in your body, you really have to get educated. You really have to understand different foods, different properties. And you know, we're so behind on that. It's amazing. You know, Asia is very smart about herbalistic remedies and eating healthy. And you see it in the people. I mean, you see the results. And even, you know, places where you think the food is really rich and stuff like France. Well, yes, it's rich, but they're eating portioned. So the simplicity is the plate. And the plate, I've seen this like 100 times in 100 different diets. They divide up the plate. Half the plate is greens. Then you can have a protein in a quarter of the plate, and you can have a carb in the other part. And that's it. And of course, it's not a supersized plate. It's a regular plate. You know, so part of it is read the label and see what a portion is. A cup of popcorn is a portion, not a half a bag.
Exactly.
And,
right.
And even if it's healthy,
half a bag. Oh my God.
Oh God. Well, I'm on, you know, I started, like I said, I'm a diet for life guy. So I did need to lose some weight, and I'm like, okay, which one do I want to try? And I went with the Mayo Clinic. I was looking around, and I'm like, okay, well, Mayo Clinic, they, you know, and their whole diet is based on habit. And that's really what life needs to become, a habit, like sleep. How do you sleep right? You go to bed the same time every night. I don't care if it's Saturday or Sunday or Monday or Tuesday or whatever. You try to have a consistency. You know, this is when I go to bed, and have a routine. These things sound crazy. And I know when we're young, it's like, I can't live a routine. But as we get older, we can. And we can't act like we're young anymore. I mean, Saturday Night Live isn't on my radar anymore. It's gone. You know, if I want to watch it, I'm going to DVR it. But it's not on my radar anymore. But it's the same thing with eating. You have to make it a habit. And it's not that you can't break it sometimes. Sometimes, hey, you know, we're at the holiday season. But you don't have to go gangbusters. And you just know, okay, I broke it. And I'm allowed a day. I mean, I'm allowed to have pizza when I want to have pizza. I just know that I go back on it. And it's, and that's why it's a diet for life, not a diet.
So well said, man. And all these things play into recovery from any type of trauma. And of course, in particular, from bullying here, because we really need to do our best to set ourselves up for success and give our bodies and our minds the best possible opportunities to heal along with us, because, you know, getting enough sleep and getting enough exercise and eating right really does help us function at a high level, a very efficient level. Our energy stays up and we get into this, you know, routine of making healthy decisions. And that can really propel us in, you know, for what's ahead, whether you're in just starting your recovery from bullying in this case, or if you're, you know, been at it for a long time and, you know, now you're just kind of keeping up with it and understanding as you go along that the effects of what happened are still with you, and all these things that go along with healing. One of the best ways to set yourself up for success is to really do those three things. So you can physically be able to keep up with the mental power that's needed to really put in the hard work to heal from bullying, you know, to heal from complex trauma. And I just think everything you said is amazing, man. I mean, we could talk for hours, and I'm definitely going to have you back on this show again. But why don't we wrap up? You can tell everybody what you're working on now, where they can find you on social media, your book, the website, all that good stuff.
Great. Well, thank you. And I've enjoyed this hour. As always, they fly by, and I'm always happy to do another round. Bullyingrecovery.org is the website. From there, you can pretty much get anywhere. Healthy You Coaching, which is an offshoot off of Bullying Recovery, is there. So you can go to my coaching page and see the coaching I do. I really do focus my coaching on individuals. I'm not really a coach for corporations or making people better leaders. I'm making them better selves. So you can find out, and I always, my first session is always free because I'm getting to know you, you're getting to know me. So there's no risk. And you know, Matt's a coach, I'm a coach. Everybody coaches differently. So just like in any mental health thing, you need to find the right person for you. But what I'm working on, what I'm really excited about is, so I have two books out, my memoir about what I went through called A Ladder in the Dark, available on Amazon or any online bookseller, and Crossing the Line, which is a fictional account based, in fact, on why teenagers make the choice of either suicide or school violence due to bullying. So those are my two books. And now I'm working on what I always really wanted to work on, which is a documentary called Climbing Out of the Dark, which is somewhat my story again, with the conclusion of going back to Massachusetts and speaking to these people who were, you know, was where the damage happened, because that's a part of my story too that I know we don't have time to share. I'm on Facebook at Bullying Recovery and at Healthy You Coaching. I'm on Twitter. I tweet fairly consistently at Bullying LTE, which is long-term effects. And basically, you can look up Alan Eisenberg Bullying, and you're going to find a whole. I write for The Mighty. I write for several other blog sites that help people, which I love doing. And that's really it. I mean, I think the easiest way to find me is either go to bullyingrecovery.org or just type in on Google Alan Eisenberg Bullying, and I'll be the only one you find.
Most excellent, man. Thanks so much, Alan. I appreciate it. I highly recommend it. Definitely check out bullyingrecovery.org. Follow him on social media. I'll put all the links in the blog post on the show notes. I will put the link that the show that I did with Alan on his podcast, and we will definitely have you on again, man, because every question that we talked about had about 100 different offshoots we could have went down. And so I'm glad that we were able to kind of, you know, take this time, dive into a little bit about what you're doing, your passion for helping those who are survivors of bullying really just realize that there is hope, that there is healing, and that you can live the life that you want through the hard work of recovery. And so, Alan, from one coach to another, from one friend to another, from one survivor to another, you're amazing, dude. I appreciate you coming on, and I can't wait to do it again, man.
Me too. I really appreciate you having me on the show, and I had a great time. I hope we, you know, we all get something out of what we do.
Thanks for listening to Beyond Your Past, part of the Mental Health News Radio Network. Information shared on this podcast should not be considered as a substitute for professional medical help or mental health counseling. If you've ever considered working with a certified coach, or if you simply have questions about how working with a coach can benefit you, just head on over to beyondyourpast.com for more information and to schedule your free introductory session. We'll work together to figure out what's holding you back so that you can realize your full potential and discover the authentic you. Remember, you are worth it. Achieving your goals and waking up each day knowing that you can handle what's coming and thrive is something that everyone deserves. So take that first step and contact me today, and let's do this. Talk to you soon.